From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Tennessee has a state bird, a state amphibian, and even an official state beverage, but it could soon become the third state to have its own official microbe. We'll meet two of the students who are leading that charge in just a few moments. But first, NPR science correspondent Joe Palca was in Knoxville this week for a talk at the University of Tennessee. Now, Palca did not start out as a journalist. In fact, he has a PhD in psychology with a focus in sleep physiology. WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper spoke with Palca about his background in science and about how difficult it is sometimes to report on scientific topics without leaving out the most important details.
So what happens in science is you get a lot of information. I mean, any topic has a lot of nuance, has a lot of background, has a lot of caveats, has a lot of references. And when you're a scientist, so much of your life is based on making sure that every single thing that you say is defensible, so that everything has a reference behind it, everything has the data behind it. I mean, you can still say things that you're speculating on, but you have to be very clear why you're speculating and where your speculations come from, because you can't just go off into the realm of, you know, make-believe, because somebody's going to say, well, you know, what's the evidence for that? The problem is that to communicate the gist of what you're talking about, you have to leave all that out. Mm. As an example, I could tell you in great detail about what I did for my doctoral dissertation. It had to do with temperature regulation during sleep. I can tell you where that question came from. I can tell you what I was measuring. I can tell you how I looked at the data. You don't need to know all that. I had to know all that. You don't need to know all that. All you need to know is that we're warm-blooded creatures, we human beings, and when we go to sleep, our temperature drops. Well, why does it drop? Well, partly because we're not moving around and our bodies aren't generating as much energy. But the question is, we're warm-blooded, right? So once we reach a certain point, we start heating ourselves up, and it's sort of like a thermostat in your house. What happens during the night is like turning the thermostat down. So if your normal temperature is 98.6, and if your body starts getting colder than that, you're going to do things to raise your temperature. During the night, it might be 94 or 95. It might be a couple degrees cooler. So if you push people into a colder environment, they're going to drop their temperature. One of the interesting things that I found is that they maintain their brain temperature at a much higher level than their core temperature. So your internal to your body might cool off, but your brain is kept at the right temperature. And again, that's where we get into speculation. All I need you to know is that I studied what happens when people go to sleep in a cold room and how they maintain their temperature and what changes.
I've learned something brand new from just this exchange that we had.
Right.
I had no idea that the brain had a separate temperature than the rest of the body.
Well, it has, if my research is right, which it might not be, but I hope it was, turns out that, you know, it's very important to keep your brain in a normal temperature zone, and less important if your feet get cold, right? I mean, everybody's feet get cold. So the body has made certain trade-offs in terms of where do I have to keep temperature constant and where can I let things, you know, go for a little while. That's interesting. I mean, what's going on there? I don't know. I mean, I have some ideas, and I'm happy to share them if sleep researchers want to call and we could talk about it. But from your point of view, yeah, it's only that, wow, you mean we have, it's like zones in your house, you know.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's been great. I love it here.
Every state has its official symbols, the state song, the state bird, the state freshwater fish. You get the idea. Well, a group of biology students at the University of Tennessee wants to take that concept one step further. They want the General Assembly to declare an official state microbe. You heard me right. To hear more about this proposal, two of those biology students now join me. Caleb Lida, Jordan Bakley, welcome to The Method. And this idea is the brainchild of a class assignment in which your teacher, Dr. Jeremy Chandler, asked you to find a suitable candidate to be the state microbe. How did you go about doing your research?
Well, we had talked about in class looking at the different bacteria maybe that would be relevant to Tennessee. So we thought we had thought about, you know, like maybe bacteria involved in like the Jack Daniel's, you know, process of distillery. After we just kind of researched around and found photohabitus luminescence to be interesting and also had a pretty significant role in Tennessee's history.
Well, let's talk about then, Jordan, why this particular bacterium? What is it that makes photohabitus luminescence a good candidate for state microbe?
Photohabitus luminescence was first recorded after the Battle of Shiloh in 1862. In this battle, 3,000 soldiers died and 16,000 were wounded. During this battle, it was sub-freezing temperatures, and many of the soldiers had hypothermia, and this enabled the cold-loving bacteria to inhabit these wounded soldiers in their wounds and illuminate a glow. And it also produced antibiotics, so it protected them and helped them be identified.
You're saying that this bacteria sort of moved in, set up camp in these wounds in Civil War soldiers, and not only did it glow, which helped identify where the wounds were on a person's body, but the bacterium actually helped sort of keep the area, well, sterile for 19th century conditions anyway, and sort of prevented even worse infections from setting up. The next step for you guys was contacting state lawmakers, which I have been told that you did. You sent letters to State Representative Ryan Haynes and State Senator Becky Duncan Massey. Caleb, what do you hope happens next? What is the next step here?
I think what we're looking for is the approval of photohabitus luminescence as Tennessee's state microbe.
And what do you think the chances are of that? Have you heard back from the legislators or anything?
We have not. We just sent our proposal out yesterday.
Okay.
And to me, I think it looks pretty promising.
Well, to the both of you now, as microbiology students at the university, what do you think about this project? Did you learn something new?
We did. Yeah. We learned that photohabitus luminescence is a very unique bacteria. It's the only non-marine living bacteria, or organism really, that is capable of natural luminescence and pathogenic towards insects. And that has never been seen in an organism.
Yeah. So this is the kind of bacteria that can be helpful and harmful basically at the same time.
Yes, yes.
Very interesting. Jordan Bakley and Caleb Lida are microbiology students at the University of Tennessee, and they're part of a class whose proposal seeks to make Tennessee the third state with an official state microbe. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in and being with us today.
All right, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Glovals.
Glovals indeed. Well, that does it for this edition of The Method. Remember, you can listen to any of our past editions online at wuot.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.